The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 14th of April, 2021. On the podcast today, Source Bio International's Executive Chairman Jay LeCue talks through their final results, which showed significant revenue increases by 139% to 50.7 million. Gross profit increased by 135% to 20.5 million. And cash generation increased by 120% to 6.4 million. Also on the podcast, Craig Martin, chairman of Dynam Capital, whose investment manager for Vietnam Holdings, provides a monthly update which shows the fund's NAV for March up by 1.1%, up by 10.4% for Q1, and a 53.1% increase since the start of the financial year in July 2020. Also, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about China trying to limit commodity prices and covers news from Africatin, Kefi Minerals, and Strategic Minerals. And at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. By the way, you can look at both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see lots for the content. In fact, there's an article there on Couth Hills 2020 as a transformational year. There's also an article there on Renalytics AI. There's also one there on Strategic Minerals. And Verici DX hails good progress since IPO. And, of course, there's a video there with Paul Hill and Northbridge Industrial Services. Final results, Q&A. Plus, I always check out the COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Silence Therapeutics, up 6% to 538. Biggest faller, Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, down 34.7% to 4.475. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jay LeCue, Executive Chairman of Source Bio International, SBI. His ticker there. Jay, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Justin. How are you? Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm very good. You must be feeling quite good. I just checked out your financial results for the year, and you've knocked it out of the park there.
Well, we're pretty pleased with the performance. We had a lot of people working very hard 24/7, and we're pretty pleased with the results.
Yeah. Well, we'll dig into it. And before we do, if someone listening right now, Jay, is not familiar with Source Bio, just give them, if you could, a brief summary as to what you're all about.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Source Bio is a leading provider of laboratory services to blue chip pharma, NHS, and private hospitals. We've got four major business units: infectious disease testing, which is new from last year. Mm-hmm. We've got a healthcare diagnostics business, which is primarily cellular pathology. We've got a genomics testing business and a stability storage business, which is shelf life testing for drug products and consumer products.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. Okay, so full year results ended the 31st of December. Let's start off with, we'll break it down into financial, operational, and then post-period, if we can. So let's go with financial highlights. And I like to look at companies with double-digit percentage rises. You've got triple-digit percentage rises there. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Jay.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's primarily COVID driven. I mean, we knew coming into the beginning of the COVID pandemic that it was going to impact our cellular pathology business as elective surgeries were put on sort of hold or delayed significantly. We decided to pivot into COVID testing, and we were able to leverage our accreditations with UCAS and our ISO 15189 status with the NHS and the DHSC to quickly put together a solid COVID testing services offering, which we were able to do. It's really primarily that. You know, our cellular pathology business did get impacted a bit. Our genomics business actually recovered relatively well, given that we got hit in Q2. And then our storage business got hit a bit, but that's a strong business with a strong recurring revenue stream. So we're seeing that, recovering, post this lockdown that we're in.
Yeah, yeah. And so your revenue increased by 139% to 50.7 million.
Yes.
Yes. Gross profit 135% to 20.5 million. Adjusted EBITDA increased 369% to 14.2 million. That's impressive. And I suppose people are asking that. You say you're able to pivot into this. And is this a short opportunity window you got, Jay? And can you pivot back out if you need to? What's the deal?
Well, that's a good question. We see it as a little bit longer than we originally did. A lot of people, even at the IPO back in October, were thinking, okay, it's going to be one and done, and it's going to be a spike. The vaccine's going to come, and it's all going to be over. We're increasingly seeing, and hearing that's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got variants. You've got the vaccine rollout doing very well, but not everyone's going to get it. You've just got a much longer runway here for this, we believe, and we're gearing up to support it, not only in 21 and 22, but probably tailing off in 23, 24. There's a study that was just done by Boss Consulting Group that looked at this, European countries in the U.S. and said, definitely it's going to peak in late 21, early 22, and then there'll still be demand for testing in 23, 24, especially around travel and when you need to, get on a plane, you've got to have a PCR test.
Yeah, absolutely. So you think, and then when it does peak, like you say, and it'll slowly taper off, like I said, you pivoted into this very quickly. So other parts of the business will take up the slack, will they?
Well, actually, certainly they will, especially the cellular pathology business, which was growing at 40% a year prior to COVID. Okay. Q1 of 2020, it grew 80% over prior year. So there's just a increasing demand for outsourced pathology services that we're sort of positioning ourselves for and have been. Now you've got the backlog of elective surgeries, which is going to create even more demand. So we're going to see that business really, really take off. I think another really important point here is we're generating a lot of cash and we're intending to use that cash for acquisition. So we want to put, businesses that support our current base businesses and add those on, sort of do a bolt on, and then that'll increase the value of the company. So yeah, it's nice to have the COVID. It is sort of even if it's a three, four year opportunity, to generate cash, we are going to put that cash to work, plowing it back into the business.
Yeah, but it says a lot about the business. When you pivot like that, like you said, and it pays off so well, did you expect it to do so well?
I mean, honestly, we didn't expect it to do as well as it did, but I will credit everybody in the company, especially the Nottingham team, for just over-delivering 24/7. I mean, we had a lot of work, and we delivered, so it was impressive to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, looking forward now, if you could say over the next 12 months or 3 years, what's your thoughts there? What are you looking at?
Well, over the next 12 months, I think we're going, one thing we're also doing, talk about pivot, we're pivoting now into other types of testing. Yeah. So we have PCR, we're good at it, we're going to continue to offer it. We're getting into localized testing on, DHSC trailers and vans. We did a deal with Oxford Nanopore to support their technology rollout. We're looking, we've got a quantifiable antibody test validated, ready to go. That once we believe antibody testing might become more important with the vaccine rollout, we're ready to go with that technology. We're looking at a lateral flow partner that has, exceptional sensitivity, much better than what's out there right now. So we are, and I think, airports are setting up their own testing capabilities. We're going to be partnering with our major pharmaceutical retail chain to offer that at airports, leading airports in the UK. So we're taking what was a, primarily a PCR Nottingham-based business, and we're really going, across the UK, building the business. We're putting a lab in San Diego to start offering our services in the US as well. So that's a big focus of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we think the cellular pathology business will come back in H2. That's kind of what we're thinking. And if it does, we're ready for it. Genomics is doing well, and then stability storage obviously is needs to turn around. I mean, it was impacted by the shutdown. And certainly acquisitions, we're looking at it. We've got a short list. We don't want to get too detailed right now because nothing's that firm. But we are looking to build a business with acquisitions going forward as well.
Yeah. And I suppose the technology that enables this testing is useful for other things, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, PCR has been around a long time, and we were able to develop it for COVID. And, we're not the only people that are doing testing for, COVID testing with PCR. We just happen to have had, a very good relationship with the NHS and DHSC. We've got, like I said, UCAS accreditation, which is very important. And we've got some solid partners that are helping us further develop the business.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Well, Jay, it's nice to talk to you, and like I say, you've knocked it out of the park with the results. But if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add Source Bio to their watch list, please?
Well, I think, you know, I might even give you four, but I'll give you three right now. I think number one, we are uniquely positioned to capitalize on this ongoing pandemic in a way that many companies aren't. We're going to take the cash generated from that and use it to build a business. That's a long-term growth opportunity. We've got a cellular pathology business that is poised to go back to, you know, significant growth rates. And I'm a shareholder in the business, so I'm definitely invested in the business.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous, Jay. It's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
That'd be great. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Martin, chairman of Dynam Capital, investment manager of Vietnam Holdings, VNH is ticker there. Craig, thank you for joining me.
Pleasure, Justin. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, and you've, of course, announced your, or released your monthly investor report, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But quickly explain, if you could, Craig, what Vietnam Holding is all about.
Well, Vietnam Holding is a Vietnam-focused fund. We're listed on the main board of the London Stock Exchange under the ticker VNH. So you can buy shares in Vietnam Holding, and we invest shares in Vietnam and manage the shares in the growth market of Vietnam. So all the underlying assets are in Vietnam, in great companies in Vietnam. But for investors, particularly in the UK, you can just buy and sell the shares of the fund on the main market. Just call your broker or do it online.
Excellent stuff. VNH is digging there. So what's new in Vietnam? We caught up last month, of course. Anything happening?
Well, yeah, there's always something happening in Vietnam. It has been like that every day for the last 30 years I've been involved in Vietnam. But yesterday was a stellar day in many ways. Vietnam set a record with 1 billion shares traded on the stock market. So that's about a billion US dollars in daily value, which is three times the volume or the value of 18 months ago. And that's really interesting. But the really interesting thing is at the moment, many of the buyers are local Vietnamese, and many of them are new investors. And as the capital markets in Vietnam are developing rapidly, and as people are getting wealthier, and as people are getting more digitally savvy and connected, they want to invest in companies they see growing around them and are doing so. So that's, you know, giving a real buzz to the market. And since July last year, at the start of our financial year, the fund Vietnam Holding, which invests in around 25 to 30 companies, has seen its asset value grow by more than 50% as the stocks we've picked have risen. So there's a great dynamism in the market. The fund's performing well as Vietnam grows and develops well. And we've got a whole new range of domestic investors wanting to explore the stock market and wanting to save money and invest for their futures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely, I mean, you know, around the world, I think we've seen it, the interest in investing pick up a bit, you know, people being at home. So it's a good thing. I'm a big fan of saying, you know, invest, create your own wealth, because in life, you've got two ways of creating your own wealth, and that's either own a successful business or own a share of a successful business. So I think that's the way forward. So, and of course,
or marry well.
Marry well or win the lottery, yeah. So you just really see your March fact sheet. We talk about Vietnam Holding having a 40% lower carbon footprint than the index. Can you explain that? How's that then?
Well, Vietnam Holding has been a signatory of the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investing for well over a decade. We were a pioneer in Vietnam, in fact. And a few years ago, we started tracking the carbon footprint of the portfolios of companies we owned. And we've just released results for 2019, December 31st, 2019, where our portfolio had a 40% lower carbon footprint per 100 pounds invested in our fund than if you just bought the index, which shows in part the value of having, you know, an active management strategy, perhaps as compared to, say, just buying in an ETF, an exchange-traded fund. Mm. And we've got a team based on the ground. They're researching and evaluating stocks and engaging with the management teams and the boards of those companies. So it's a data point. It's a moving target, of course. I mean, one of our top holdings, which has risen rapidly since the date of that report in 20, or the, when the data that report refers to, is a steel company, and that steel company has risen in value. So steel companies probably have a higher carbon footprint, but yet a good growth part of our portfolio is also in banks, which have risen sharply in value. So it'll be interesting when the 2020 numbers are finalized by June. We'll see how that carbon footprint has changed, but we, you know, we do want to measure that closely. And that E, the environmental aspect, is just really one part of an ESG story, environmental social governance. And a lot of our time and focus is also on the G, the governance, where we're engaging with these companies in Vietnam, trying to get them to be better at their own governance, better at reporting, and show greater transparency. So we like to measure these things. In our focus, we're not sacrificing investment returns for, quotes, doing good, but we want to be a responsible investor. We want to do more. We want to measure more and report more on the sustainability aspects of our investment. And that's just going to get increasingly important across the world, but also in places like Vietnam. You know, there's a big push now towards sustainable development goals, or the SDGs, and climate-related financial disclosures, and we're on top of all of those. And there'll be a big onus on the underlying companies to track what they do. Mm-hmm. And so one of our roles, not only in advocacy of responsible investing, but has been trying to help educate some of these Vietnamese companies and boards in what this means for them. So plenty to do, but it's all part of the exciting growth journey here in Vietnam.
Yeah, it's so important, that ESG, and not just, you know, a box ticking exercise. It's just so important, like you say, to adhere to those rules and governance and going forward. Excellent stuff. Great as always. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Vietnam Holding to their watch list, please.
Great. Well, firstly, Vietnam Holding trades at a 20% discount to the net asset value of the stocks in the portfolio. So for each pound of value, you only spend 80 pence if you're buying into that. Secondly, about 40% of the stocks we hold are actually a discount to the Vietnam market, i.e. we could sell those stocks at a premium. So there's actually embedded value there. And thirdly, we reckon the earnings growth of the companies in our portfolio somewhere between 20 and 25%, yet on a price to earnings of only 10 to 12 times. So there's tremendous growth and there's value. So there's three good reasons to follow and look more closely at Vietnam Holding.
Marvellous stuff, Craig. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you.
What's this about you're saying that, in fact, you know, I'm generally feeling a bit more bullish towards the economy. I think our vaccination figures are looking good. Things are opening up. It's, I don't know what you're thinking there, John, but I mean, you, I know, is still working from home. Is your plan to go back into the office on May the 17th, almost just less than, well, what is it, 33 days away now? Are you going to go back into the office?
I'm going back in next week for a few days.
Okay.
So we're going to limit the number of people in the office at any one point in time, but we are all drifting back in one way or another. And look, it's important to help the young guys in the office because they still need to learn.
Yeah.
It's good to reestablish face-to-face communication. And the most important thing is it's very important to go to the Mason's Arms across the road for a cheeky beer.
Yeah. Well, a cheeky beer or two. Yeah, absolutely. And I think now we're going to handle on this vaccination. Like, well, 40 million doses have been given out, which is amazing, the stats, you know. And there are some worrying places around the world, but people are getting confused, you know. I mean, first and foremost, in fact, this is about China. I know you're going to talk about China, but China's vaccination efficacy that they've created is about 50.4%. And that's, you know, massively different from what we got over here. We got minimum 75%. And so if you're realizing that, you know, you vaccinate 10 people and half of those only, you know, it'll be effective on. The other half is going to be passing it around, transmitting it or getting ill. Then it's not making a massive dent on the entire population. I mean, you know, so you can see why in places like Chile and Brazil was a variant that's apparently it's not as, the vaccines are not as effective on. It's spread like wildfire, especially if you've only got efficacy of only 50%, you know. So, yeah, it's a bit worrying. But we're a different case over here, you know. We are using better vaccines. You see there are quality vaccines, different quality of vaccine, isn't it, you know, which it's affecting, I suppose.
Well, in some respects, it's good to know that we can still produce the best vaccines in the world.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's unfortunate that the Chinese vaccine isn't as effective as it really needs to be. Mm. And what's really sad is, if we look at what's happening in Turkey at the moment, an enormous spread of the pandemic in Turkey, and young people getting ill with it over there. We don't know the reasons for that.
Same as Brazil, yeah, because apparently, well, the reasons is, apparently, of course, they've started with the most vulnerable people, which are older age groups. That's the same with the P1 variant in Brazil. They start with the older, so they're protected pretty much, you know, to a certain extent. But of course, the younger people aren't still, so they're still getting ill with it, but they haven't been vaccinated because they haven't been vaccinated as much as, I mean, in this country, we still haven't vaccinated young people. We're still now 45s, isn't it? In fact, I text a mate who's, I've had my vaccination, but the BBC came through on the app yesterday saying we're now open. Breaking news, opening 45 plus. I text him, and he said, boom, booked it straight away, and he's doing it today, and that was yesterday. So, yeah, we're still down at that level. But I suppose it's just about vaccination, isn't it? Some people, the younger people are not getting vaccinated, and that P1 variant, I think, I don't know what they got over Turkey, but it seems like it's a bit more, you know, dangerous, effective on younger people as well. It's hitting them a bit more, you know? So I didn't know about Turkey. Turkey's bad, is it?
Turkey's bad, and there is news that the Pfizer vaccine may not be effective against the Brazilian variant. So I think...
Oh, I didn't get it. I read it was. I read it recently. It was as effective. That's odd.
Well, there's news and there's news. But I think what we know is that we're going to have regular top-ups of sort of tweaked vaccines over the coming years. So the whole vaccine situation is not going away. But the great thing is the world is getting back onto its feet and things are opening up. Not in every part of the world. Holland and Turkey are clearly having to tighten things up again. But certainly in the UK and US, things are opening up pretty fast. And as we know, China has controlled it very well. Although I have heard that there have been outbreaks in China, which are... They're squashing the news, as they always do.
I don't trust anything from China, do you? I don't trust any news that comes from China, central office, or, you know, the government there. I don't trust anything. So, I can't believe, like I said, that the coronavirus started there without a vaccine in a city as big as London, and yet they've had, well, I don't know how many deaths they've had now, but they reckon about 8,000 people, that's all. Then when we've done, what, 120,000? I don't understand that. How they could say that? Is it just it doesn't make any sense? It's like lying beyond lying. At least make it a bit more obvious, a bit more plausible. You know that figure 8,000 is ridiculous, isn't it? I don't understand how they. So I don't believe anything they say. You know, Chinese.
Well, as always, watch what the Chinese do and don't listen too much to what they say.
Yeah, yeah.
Having said that, we do listen to the Chinese because what else have we got to go on? Mm. Yes, in fact, a high-ranking Chinese official said that they were concerned about inflation, and that's inflation caused by rising raw materials prices, and that they were looking at or might impose commodity price limits. So, for example, they might impose a limit on the price of copper of, let's say, $8,000 a ton, and because they consume around half of the world's copper, you know, they do have the power to make those sorts of things work. Now, having said that, it's almost impossible to make that kind of thing work in reality. And there would be pros and cons to whether that was good or bad for China Inc. and the Chinese economy, because metal would naturally go elsewhere in the world. But having said that, If you're producing a lot of copper and you're used to selling it into China, it's not going to be very easy to change what you're doing. Now, we think the Chinese are more likely to do things like cut speculation, so more likely to raise margins, on commodity trading, particularly iron ore trading, because that's what's been pushing steel prices, you know, over the last 6 months. And so there are other levers that they're more likely to pull rather than do something as dramatic as impose a sort of a specific limit on one or more commodities.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to that, so China has had 4,000 odd deaths, but just to put it into perspective, we've had 1,865 deaths per million population here. China, I reckon they've had 3 deaths per million population, when it actually started in a city as big as London there, and we didn't have a vaccine. So that's completely unbelievable. Isn't it? Just beyond laughable. It's a, well, the guy, the doctor who discovered it. Doctor, do you remember that? The doctor who discovered it or thought there was something bad going on was told to shut up and was arrested, and then he died of it, you know?
Yes, that's right. So we are wary of any numbers that come out of China. Yeah. But what's probably worse is, I mean, the pollution in China, just the smog that comes over the cities, particularly in the winter months, probably kills more people anyway. So they declared a level one red alert for Tangshan, where there are a lot of steel mills, on the 9th of March, and so that is limiting a certain amount of production within their economy there, and other cities and states will be following. It's something that particularly happens in the winter. But if we think this time last year, China had locked down a lot of things, and for the first time in many years, they could actually see the sky, and so the Chinese people suddenly realized that the world wasn't always as polluted as they were used to, and that maybe they should be pushing the government to be more more responsible and to limit pollution. And I think we're going to see more of this.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Okay, so individual news. First one you mentioned, well, let's go alphabetical. ATM, Afritin. What's happening there, John? What do Afritin do? I mean, it says a lot about Afritin. You can sort of work it out, but just explain what they do there.
Well, they have the UIS tin mine in Namibia. It's still getting going in many respects. It's an old mine that has been restarted. It's a low-grade tin mine, but it has tantalum and spodumene, which has lithium associated within the resources. So there's good opportunity for the Afritin management team to expand what they're doing and to squeeze extra value out of the resources there. So good on them. I think that's it's nice to hear more about that.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool. Next one is Keffi. Now, where are Keffi at? Because I remember looking when I first started, in smaller cap, and I was drawn to resource stocks because they're the ones that pretty much catch a lot of noise on Twitter, social media, because they can be, you know, massively pop and then they can drop because, of course, most of them need cash. But Keffi was one of those, and it doesn't, has it moved on from where I was looking at it like 5 years ago or not?
Yes, it has. Harry Adams, who runs the business, has been working diligently in the background. He's been in and out of Ethiopia, and he's targeting the project funding for the Tulu Kapi gold mine for the second half of this year. They're also drilling at the Hawa project in Saudi Arabia, so they've got a lot. They've got quite a lot going on. They've got a new mineral resource at the Hawa project, 19 million tons at 0.9% copper, which is a nice start, to be perfectly honest. So that's, you know, he's adding value on two fronts there. Look, Ethiopia's had its issues. It's taken a long time to get things together, but Harry's got a plan to get the money together to get it into production. So they're trying to pull together $221 million. They're proposing $100 million of equity and subordinated debt, including Ethiopian government project equity there. So look, I don't think the stock market's going to be suddenly hit by a $100 million equity issue from Keffi Minerals, because that wouldn't be realistic. But the equity will come in from a variety of different sources, and that will support $140 million worth of senior debt to back that.
Yeah. Is that going to happen, though? I mean, it goes to beyond. I always look at jurisdiction now, and I didn't pay a lot of attention to it, but I find, you know, sometimes resource companies based in questionable jurisdictions in Africa, it just takes so long you know, and you realise what's going on behind the scenes, and maybe sort of these kind of rituals, or you have to meet the village elders and buy them a goat or a cow or some kind of nonsense. It takes so long, and in the end, you'd be better off going for maybe a safer jurisdiction, but the stock maybe a bit more pricey. You know, isn't that the case?
Well, this has taken a long time, partly because the previous management of the deposit.
But that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
They went for a very large scale project, and in fact, this needed to be optimised and refined, and that's what's happened. And it's not been easy trying to pull the financing together, and hopefully, it will work this time.
Yeah, but surely Harry must think, I haven't got many years left in life compared to how long these kind of projects take. You think, I just want to move on to something else where we can be a bit more productive, you know? So fair play sticking in there for that long, because it's hard work, isn't it?
I think in the mining sector, tenacity and determination are very important things, and stuff does take longer. I mean, if you build a house, for example, everything always takes longer and costs more.
Yeah, but
more.
If you build a house in Ethiopia, it'll take longer there, I suppose, because you have to get certain permissions from elders or whatever, and it takes long. Governments around the world are slow anyway, but in certain countries, it's glacial, isn't it?
Well, strangely enough, in Africa, often things get done quite quickly because they're very keen on the jobs, and they're really quite pragmatic in many respects. And so long as you get past the old pink palm tax idea, which of course nobody's allowed to pay anymore, everyone's fine with it. So
explain the pink palm tax.
Well, there are still people holding their hands out for extra payments, and in fact, it was. Bribery was tax deductible in France till only a couple of years ago. So, but as we know, no one's allowed to do that anymore. And certainly listed companies are very careful not to make those sorts of payments. And once everybody knows that bribery is not acceptable and is not being paid, then everything seems to happen anyway.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. And the last one with a bit of news out. Strategic Minerals, SML's ticker there. What's the news there, John?
It's good old Strategic Minerals. Been a bit unloved in recent months. And in fact, they sell magnetite from their Cobre project in New Mexico in the USA. So revenues from that have risen quite nicely, $770,000in the last quarter. So That's quite nice. 13,000 tons of magnetite sold. They did have a hiccup with that last year, so it's good to see sales back on track. And remember, they've got their Lee Creek copper project, which they're pushing ahead on. So we're looking forward to further news on that and on the cash flow to come out of that, out of Lee Creek going forwards. And remember, they also own the Redmore tin tungsten copper project in Cornwall. And again, that looks like a project that has reasonable potential to go ahead in future years.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. And what's your thoughts on the commodity super cycle, John? Are you confident in it happening?
Well, yes. I mean, with copper just knocking on $9,000 a ton, I mean, it's mining companies are having a fantastic time. Gold prices are high and rising. There's inflation prospects are helping everything higher. The US dollar slipped a bit, which again was supportive for metals prices. So the mining sector has everything to play for. It should be a happy place right now. And I think there will be more good news to come. I mean, it's always possible there could be something to upset the sector, like if China was mad enough to suddenly impose a limit on copper prices or commodity prices, which I simply don't think will happen. I think they put out these sorts of stories in order to try and depress any speculation that's out there. And of course, we know the Chinese are the biggest speculators on the planet. So they really need to control their own speculators before they start looking around the rest of the world. If we look at things like rare earth prices, they are high levels, and they give great valuations for rare earth companies, for example.
Yeah. Cool, marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Equals Group, up 0.6% to 43.5. At four, Corsell, down 13.33% to 1.95. Was Regency Mines, of course. At three, Futura Medical, up 2.64% to 53.55. And at one, Clear Leisure Group, up 13.21% to 3 pence. And at one, it's Valerium Blockchain PLC, VLRM. Right there, yeah, it's, I can't see the move in that price on that yet. Also, let's check out the most read and most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets platform. Of course, another list you can check out on the front page there. So, most liked is United Oil and Gas Material Upgrade to Abu Sinan Reserves. The most read, Iconic Lab Statement Dispute with Greencastle. At four, Orosu Mining, third quarter results. At three, Napster Group, operational update. At two, United Oil and Gas, material upgrade to Abu Sinan Reserves. And at one, Himagenix, CDX option update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.